Victory or death!
Victory or death! Victory or death! Victory or death! Victory or death! Victory or death! Victory or death! Victory or death! Victory or death! Victory or death!
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Radio Free Virginia. I'm your host, Hank Reardon, the voice of freedom behind enemy lines here in the Commonwealth of Virginia, bringing you, the Patriots, the information you need to stay in the fight to preserve your liberty. This is episode 22-28, the 28th episode of 2022. And I'm going to talk about a couple different things today, share some history from Soviet Life, a magazine put out by the Communist Party in the Soviet Union that was sent around different parts of the United States. I'm going to share a chapter from The Lesser Magistrate. But first, I want to talk about what it must be like to have the government coming after you. And we can see that in various places, but we see that particularly in the case here that I'm going to share with you. The owner of a place in Spotsylvania County called Gormeltz, during all this unconstitutional, nonsensical COVID lockdown stuff, he refused to comply. He stayed open. And because he stayed open, the Virginia Department of Health yanked his, I don't know what you call it, you know, the operating permit to run a restaurant. And he said, screw you. And he stayed open. And the community supported him because they saw that this was an overreach, an unconstitutional overreach, using administrative bureaucrats to enforce the will of tyrannical people like Ralph Northam, who's never had to account or be held accountable to the tyranny that he enacted upon Virginians. So the business stayed open, and then that didn't work, right? They didn't shut him down, so he said, well, shoot, what do we do now? Let's sick the ABC on him. ABC is the Alcohol Beverage Control. So they sucked the ABC on him and said, hey, you have to stop operating. We're going to take away your liquor license. So they took it away. And he said, screw you. And he continued to operate. Don't ask me where he was getting his booze. Maybe he was just walking down to the ABC store and buying it by the caseload. I don't know. Or the beer or any of that other stuff. I don't know how that works. But he was still getting it and he was still selling. And this went on and on. And he continued to fight this in their administrative courts, and I say that in air quotes. ABC's got a long history of being idiots, and in this case, it's no different. And there's some video that's out there. I'm going to share the audio with you of that. And he is directly confronting these jackbooted thugs with the state police and the ABC, and calling them out for just following orders. So let me give you the rundown. And I did call the ABC and left a nasty message on their phone. And you could do the same at 804-213-4413. That's 804-213-4413. You can call them and leave a message and say, hey, why are you the way you are? why are you evil? January 28th of 2021, Virginia Department of Health, Rappahannock Area Health District summarily suspends Gormeltz health permit for not following COVID-19 public health requirements in the governor's executive order. Remember, I've talked many times about that, and I've done whole episodes on the illegality of the executive order and the other nonsensical stuff that was related to this farce that we all had to endure and are still in some ways enduring different parts. You see the dumb billboards, you know, protect your family, get vaccinated. But that doesn't protect me. March 4th and March 18th, virtual informational, they do all these things virtually. Virtual hearing finds that Gormeltz willfully and knowingly ignored Code of Virginia, blah, blah, blah. And it requires licensees to conform to local health requirements and revokes the license on March 31st. Action on the license is stayed pending Gormeltz appealing the decision of the administrative law. And that was March of 2021. August 2021, the appeal hearing by ABC Board of Directors. September 2021, this is all still under COVID nonsensical, unconstitutional, illegal, tyrannical garbage. ABC continues its final decision an order modifying the hearing officer's decision from a revocation to a suspension of Gourmelt's wine and beer and on-off premises and mixed beverage license. ABC grants a stay on the board order to allow Gourmelt's the opportunity to appeal to Circuit Court. Circuit Court of Spotsylvania County hearing is on August 4th. October 26th, the trial judge issues a letter opinion affirming the ABC board order in all respects. So the trial judge says, you have to do what they say. November 10th, 2022. That was 2022. November 10th. So this is a long process, obviously, you know, when you're dealing with bureaucrats. And can you imagine the weight and the stress that Mike and his family and his business must be feeling? Having to put up with this stuff. You know, this guy, he likes cooking, sets up a restaurant, puts his life and his energy and his effort into this, and he has to put up with this crap. November 10th, 2022, Circuit Court of Spotsylvania County issues a final order affirming the board order in all respects. So the court says, thumbs up. Good job, tyrants. So that's when you say, well, we can fight this in the courts. I'm so sick of hearing that. I don't want to hear that. There's only one way to fight this. You know what I'm talking about. November 15, 2022, ABC serves the board order suspending Gourmelt's beer and wine license and mixed beverage license for a period of 90 days. The suspension would be reduced to 15 days upon payment. So they're trying to give him an out. Hey, you know what? We'll make this all just go away. I know you've spent who knows how much money on lawyers and your time and putting up with our stuff, but we'll go ahead and just make this all just go away. It's kind of like the mafia coming and saying, you know, well, we're going to protect your business. Protect it from what? Well, from us. From bad guys that are going to do bad things. So they'll reduce it if you pay $4,000 penalty and $6,469.18 in investigation costs. What investigation? Honestly. I mean, seriously, honestly, what investigation? How many guys does it really take? Let's say you got two investigators, right? And they have to spend, you know, a few hours. How many? Say they're paid $30 an hour, and I don't know. They have to work 20 hours, 30 hours. How many hours does it really take to investigate that this guy violated a health order, even though it's unconstitutional, and this guy continued to sell alcohol, and even though we suspended his license, and yada yada yada. So. The summary of this is today, the Virginia Alcohol Beverage Control Authority executed a search warrant against Gourmelt's LLC in Spotsylvania County for records and information related to possession of alcoholic beverages without a license, maintaining a common nuisance, and the illegal sale of alcoholic beverages. Despite administrative proceedings and the final order of the Circuit Court of Spotsylvania County affirming Virginia's ABC decision to suspend Gourmelt's wine, beer, on-off premises, and mixed beverage license, the establishment failed to comply with the ABC order. And continue to serve beer, wine, and mixed beverages to customers. The outrage. They didn't do what we said. And that's the thing bureaucrats don't like when you don't do what they say. But I think more of us need to not do what they say. Especially these jokers. In the video, I'm not going to share the whole thing. You can go watch it if you have Facebook. You can go to Gourmelt. Just search Gourmelt. It's G-O-U-R-M-E-L-T-Z. Just search that on Facebook. You can find their page and you can find the live stream videos that he had put up while this was happening. So I'm going to play a little bit of this audio here so you can hear the interaction here. This guy's standing up. This guy is a patriot. So if you're anywhere near Spotsylvania County, you should go support this guy. Makes me want to just drive up there and go to this place. And I don't know. I'm very picky. I probably wouldn't even like the food, but you know, I just think that we need to be up there supporting this guy. And here's what I think he should do. I think he should have a BYOB thing at his restaurant. Bring your own booze. And you know, I mean, why not? It'd be hilarious. I think it would be just be awesome. And bring your own booze. And you know, the hard part is that that's a way of this. There's a lot of money in that at restaurants, a lot. It's probably more than the food, you know? So the hard part is that that's a lot of revenue that the state is stealing. And here's the thing. Here's the thing I want you to get from all this. Where is the governor? This is an administrative arm of the state. Where is the governor? Huh, Governor Youngkin? The future next president of the United States, right? Everyone's talking about that. Oh, he should run for president because he's done nothing, but he should run. Where's the governor? Where's the governor with no guns at the ABC store or at the rest areas? Where's the governor with that? Where's the attorney general, Jason Miaris, on this? Where are they? Where are the, you know, Amanda Chase was there. There's video of her there trying to fight this. But where is the rest of the so-called conservative champions for liberty in the state? That's what I want to know. So check out this audio here. And at one point, he actually lets them, you say, they want to get into the POS system and this, that, and the other, and investigate. I would have told him to pound sand. I said, I'm not cooperating in any way with you. If you need something, figure it out, you jackbooted pieces of garbage. But he's probably doing the calculus in his head. If I don't comply with this, they're going to take my POS machine. Then I won't be able to sell food because I won't have a cash register. That's probably what he's thinking, but I don't know. There's some things I can't say that are rolling around in my brain. But This isn't something you just, we're going to fight this in the courts.
So you're here to confiscate all of my alcohol?
Yes, sir.
And what else?
Records, cans, sale.
And what else?
Purchase of alcohol.
Is that it?
And if it's electronic, it comes off your POS.
You're here to confiscate my POS systems?
You can confiscate the POS if that's what's necessary.
You guys felt the need to bring all of these police officers here just to do that this morning?
Really?
And what's the reason for you guys coming into my business, confiscating my POS systems, confiscating my alcohol? What's the reason for that?
There is a board order that suspends your
license. Right. Yeah. So you're part of the problem, man. I want you to know that. You're part of the problem. 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 Everybody in here, every one of you, man. What's going on in this country right now? The reason that we're in the situation we're in as the United States of America, you're part of the problem, sir. So you can't complain about what the president's doing. You can't complain about the state that the country's in right now. You can't complain about how screwed up it is. You're part of the problem, sir. You're just doing your job. So many people were just doing their job for Hitler back in Germany.
Here to assist ABC inside.
You as well, sir. That goes for you as well. That goes for you as well. That goes for all of you. That goes for all of you, man. There's no excuse. There's zero excuse. Just doing my job, that's not an excuse anymore, man. That's not an excuse. You guys just doing your job is facilitating what's going on in this country right now. You're shutting down a man's livelihood for not following COVID mandates that didn't do anything to prevent COVID. And it was actually detrimental to the community, and not just the community, to our kids, man. It set our kids back so many years, these mandates. It set small businesses back so many years. It destroyed small businesses, man. It destroyed them. It destroyed families. It destroyed our community, and it destroyed our country. And nobody in here gives a damn about that. They're just doing their job. Just doing their job. And they're going to continue to do their job. All to preserve themselves. Nothing is more important than themselves, man. Their country is not as important as themselves. I guess your family's not either, sir. Because if you got children, you're setting them up for failure. By not standing up right now, today, you're setting your kids up for failure. You're setting your family up for failure. And you're destroying your country. I hope you feel good about that. I hope you can sleep well at night. I spent many years of my life overseas fighting for my country just to come home and have the same government that I fought for destroy everything that I've worked my entire life for. But you're just doing your job, man. Just doing your job. You're not protecting and serving anything. And I've got a lot of respect for the police. A lot of respect for police officers who put their lives on the line every day for me. But this is not what that uniform is about. It's not. What you're doing right now is government overreach. What you're doing right now is supporting a tyrannical government. It's tyranny, and you're involved in it. You're complicit with it. And it wouldn't be happening if all of you stood up. If all of you stood up and said, I'm not doing that. I'm not contributing to that. I'm not going to be involved in that. The Constitution means more to me than my self-preservation. If any of you guys had the balls to stand up and say that and fight for that, this would not be going on right now. Because if they had nobody to come out and enforce these unconstitutional mandates, nobody would be doing it. They wouldn't do it themselves, I promise you that. But it's because of weak-minded Americans, so-called Americans, doing exactly what you guys are doing right now, is why we're in the situation that we're in as a country. I need to stop what? This is my restaurant, man.
It is.
I need to stop what?
Right now. You're not coming past here.
Okay. What is this line right here?
Okay, this is where they're doing it.
What is this line right here, though?
Okay,
why is it this line that I can't go past?
Using this as a platform, but it's gonna
stop it. Ain't a platform. It's not a platform. I'm using this to make sure this doesn't happen to anybody else ever again.
You made video from a distance, but you're not going past this.
Why not pass this line? What is this, what is this arbitrary line that you just made up? Why can't I pass this? Because you said so? You know what you sound like? You sound like the government. You sound like the government that I'm fighting against because I said so. What am I obstructing? What am I obstructing? I'm standing still. I'm talking. I have every right to talk. It's called the First Amendment. It's called the First Amendment. You going to take that away from me as well? Huh? He just said he's going to arrest me. I want to know for what? On what grounds? On what grounds are you going to arrest me? You don't know. On what grounds? What am I obstructing? What am I obstructing? You just said you're going to arrest me for obstruction. What am I obstructing? Can you answer my question? You didn't answer. What do you need the password to my POS system for? To see if I'm selling alcohol? I'm telling you right now to your face, I'm selling alcohol. Because I didn't violate any laws. I've been following every ABC law that I agreed to follow when I obtained my ABC license. What I will not follow is unconstitutional mandates. I will not follow them ever. I'll die for the Constitution. I'll die for the United States of America. None of these gentlemen will. Because they're all cowards. What do you need to see it for? I'm telling you, I'm selling alcohol. There's all the proof you need. That's all the proof you need. All these police officers in here, man, for one man. For one man. All these police officers in here for one man. And I'm using this as a platform. A platform.
I understand that. Mr. Sirkin, where do you keep your invoices on?
I can't believe you would say something like that, man. This has nothing to do with the platform. This has something to do with making sure this doesn't happen to anybody else ever again. And the reason why you can't say that is because you've been brainwashed, man. You've been brainwashed into self-preservation. I'm just doing my job. And you realize you're doing this because I didn't follow COVID mandates, right?
We're here because you violated the court.
We're not here. You guys agree with COVID mandates? Not here to discuss that? Yeah, just doing your job. Just doing your job.
We're not here to debate the merits of mandates
right.
Or any of that stuff.
Okay.
All I know is that...
Just doing your job.
Order.
Yeah.
We can follow that board order.
Uh-huh.
We've got the investigation right now.
Okay.
We are doing our job.
Yeah.
Based on what I have been sworn to do.
Really? Have you been sworn to uphold the Constitution?
This is what I'm saying.
Go ahead.
To enforce the laws of the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Okay.
To include the alcohol laws, 1.1, the administrative code.
Okay.
That's why we're here. All that other stuff, the merits of the mandates and all that stuff, that's something that you handle.
Were you sworn to uphold the Constitution of Virginia? You were? You're violating it right now.
I'm not getting into merits of that. I'm doing my job as a...
That's the merits of your job. You were sworn to uphold the Constitution of the state of Virginia. You're violating it right now.
Here's what we're going to do. We're here to execute a search warrant that was lawfully acquired and obtained from the duly sworn magistrate of the Commonwealth of Virginia. We're going to execute that search warrant.
No matter if the premise was unconstitutional or illegal.
I don't have that. That's not.
That's above your pay grade. That's a great excuse as well.
It's not why I'm here.
Okay. Just doing your job. All right, that's what I'm talking about, man. You guys see this? We just elected a Republican, so-called conservative governor, so-called conservative lieutenant governor, attorney general, House of Delegates. and we're still being prosecuted for not following COVID mandates. Folks, you tell me what's wrong with this country. What's wrong with this country is nobody has a backbone. Nobody is actually willing to stand up for the Constitution. All people want to do is act in self-preservation. I'm just doing my job. This is insane, man. Nothing gets fixed in this country with you guys having that mentality.
So there you have it. We have the agents of tyranny just doing their job. Just doing their job. 2 years later, just doing their job. It's just ridiculous. And this is what you hear all the time. When people are confronted, when these agents of tyranny are confronted, this is what you hear. Well, I'm not here to debate the merits of that. I have a court order and blah, blah, blah. I'm just doing my job. Yeah, okay. So when the IRS locks and chains the door shut and the sheriff helps him, I'm just doing my job. Oh, I'm not really here to debate that. I have a court order and just da-da-da-da, right? Same old stuff. Same exact freaking stuff. So here, let's look at what the governor said. This just came out December 6th. This is on the governor's website. Now, everyone talks about what a great conservative leader he is. This isn't leading. This is leading from behind, not leading from in front. The governor issued this on December 6th. When did all this Gormelt stuff happen? Before that. December 2nd. So, leading from behind. He knew this was going on. There's no way he couldn't have known this was going on. You want to lead? The day he took office, he should have ended this stuff. The day he took office. But here's what the release says. Governor Youngkin issued an executive order today directing enforcement agencies, boards, and commissions to report all fines, fees, suspensions related to COVID-19 shutdown violations. The governor also announced he will direct agencies to halt further collection and enforcement action in his upcoming budget to be delivered on December 15th. The budget will also direct the Secretary of Finance to work with agencies to develop a reimbursement process for individuals and businesses who paid unjust COVID-19 fines and fees. Good. Okay, this is good. But this is what he should have done when he took office. Not now when it's blown up in his face that, hey, maybe he's not the super conservative, uber awesome conservative leader that we were all hoping for, right? I am today requiring a statewide review of COVID-19 related penalties imposed by the Northam administration. The fact that businesses are still dealing with COVID-19 related penalties and fines is infuriating. Yeah, it is. And they've been dealing with that, and you have done nothing up to this point. Livelihoods are on the line, said Governor Glenn Youngkin. In the previous administration, we saw our government shut down businesses, close our schools, and separate us from each other. While we can't undo the damage done during the Northam administration, we are taking action going forward to end COVID-era draconian overreach. Good. It's about time. Well, I'm supposed to give you a good job. Good job. Little pat on the back. I'm supposed to give that to you for doing what you should have done when you took office. I look forward to working with the General Assembly to address this. Forgive COVID-19 fines and fees and restore licenses that were unjustly suspended. Good. About time. The budget language will not apply to instances where the violation was in relation to practices, guidelines, rules, or operating procedures intended to protect the health and safety of individuals, patients, residents, and staff at hospitals, nursing homes, certified nursing facilities, hospices, or assisted living facilities. So what that's saying is we're not going to penalize hospitals and nursing homes who wouldn't let you see your dying relative because of our stupid COVID-19 mandates. You know who went into a deep dark hole somewhere? Ralph Northam. The same deep dark hole that Tony Fauci is probably going to disappear into and collect his massive, huge government pension. Ralph Northam is a piece of garbage and is a tyrant, and no one can forget that. But I'm sick and tired of this. Governor Glenn Youngkin is a potential presidential contender. Well, all he's done is beat Ralph Northam. Pile of poo could have beat Ralph Northam. People were so ticked off at him. I was about to suggest before I started this and found all this information that we start calling the governor's office, but it's about time he's doing something. You know, and where are all these rock star lawyers that we supposedly have everywhere, right? You know, all these rock star lawyers, you know, they're supposedly doing all this great legal jurisprudence. Where are these guys fighting for this man's civil rights? This guy has a right to operate his business without the government jackbooted thugs kicking down his door. How about that? He held his cool, man, a lot more than I did. I'll tell you that. Because he didn't use any profanity, and I'd have popped my top. I would have become the sailor. I'm not a sailor. I wasn't a sailor. But I'd have become a sailor. I'd have been calling out these fat slobs. You know, I mean, there's a good 50 to 100 pounds overweight, depending on the officer. Well, it was the Virginia ABC officers, not the Stateys. The Stateys were your typical military-looking, you know, guys. Square jaw, you know, that whole thing. You could tell he was getting under that guy's skin, though. It was pretty great. And I hope that guy has trouble sleeping. I hope that guy has a problem with what he did, but he probably doesn't. Then these are the guys you think, you know, oh, I back the blue. You know what? Back the blue when they back you, which is rare. It's rare that law enforcement backs you. So I don't want to hear it anymore. We're responsible for our own dang safety. This whole idea that we need police to keep us safe is stupid. If people need police to keep them safe, they're stupid. Protect yourself. You know why an armed society is a polite society? Because you realize that guy might have a gun too. Maybe I should chill out. It's a very frustrating situation, I feel, for the guy. And I hope that Governor Conservative, super conservative, you know, supposed Governor Glenn Youngkin can get this squared away. How many of these businesses, you're going to give them their fines back or whatever, right? Those that actually paid it. You're going to give them their fines back. How many of those businesses are still in business? COVID killed a lot of them because of things like this, having to shut down and stuff. And this guy said, I don't think so. Good for him. I love it. Just love it. So if you're in Spotsylvania County, check out Gourmelts, G-O-U-R-M-E-L-T-Z, and give them some money. Speaking of money, I'm going to talk about budgeting here. What's got me on a kick to look at my finances is the recent taxes we did where we owed a lot of money. We owed a lot of money in taxes, but that partly was, I don't know if it was my company's fault or my fault. Something got screwed up somewhere along the way and no withholding was being taken out. And I don't notice because it's all direct deposited. So it didn't really cross my mind. I may check to make sure the hours are on the check occasionally, but that's about it. And so I waited too long. I should have been filing my taxes. I was like, this is a pain. And finally just got to the point where I just handed it off to an accountant. But I was a year behind. So then 2 years of taxes being filed at the same time, didn't have withholding, and I went, oh my gosh. And it's a lot of money. It's thousands of dollars. So I'm dealing with that. So I start looking at this going, why are we hemorrhaging money? What is going on? And what I found was, and this is true of any financial thing, if you have money, you will spend it. So if we made more money, which we are making more money, I got a raise to account for inflation. I'll talk about wage inflation in a second here, but we are making more money, and as a result, we're being taxed more, as well as more money is going out, not just because of inflation, but because if you have $1,000 one month and say, you know, nice round number, $2,000 the next month, you're going to spend $2,000 probably if you don't have a budget and in some way to track what you're doing and not overspend in these things. Now there are some aspects where that's not the case, where things like inflation just take over and there's nothing you can do about it because it just is what it is. Fuel costs what it costs. So I'll go over a few line items here. One of the hard things to categorize is because of the way transactions look. So for example, if I go to the Walmart pharmacy, it might just say Walmart. So I have a hard time knowing, okay, is that prescriptions, because I'm type 1 diabetic, so I have a fair amount of prescriptions I have to pick up. Is that prescriptions or is that groceries? So I did my best to kind of go through there. And so some of these numbers are a little off because of that. But overall, I'm pretty confident in a few things in these bullet point items. So education is more this year. The kids' private school is more. The activities and the different things, you know, my son's senior trip and these things that we're paying for or more. So this year we spent 4,236. Last year it was 3,705. Not too bad. And I'm sure there are things that aren't accounted for in there that would actually make that number a lot higher. But that, oh, and this is over about a 3-month period of time that these numbers that I'm sharing with you are. So entertainment is really close at 817, but I will say $817 over a several month period. But that's any entertainment. So that's, you know, streaming movies, going to the movies, various trips and activities. We did a lot of travel in 2021. Didn't do as much in that time period. Didn't do as much in 2022. However, you know, just the way things all shake out. So entertainment. All right. So let's look at the some items here. So education. Education is about $1,000 more this year than it was last year in this 3-month period of time. However, it is a little skewed by my son is a senior and he's taking a trip, and so we've been helping to fund that, and so that plays a part in that. And so education overall is pretty close to last year. Month to month cost has gone up about $100 or $200. I think it's about a $150 difference. So inflation has, we've taken a hit there for inflation, and that's a per month cost, so $150 more dollars a month for school. And fuel is what the biggest one here. Fuel is, in 2021 we spent $433. In this time period in 2022 we spent $1,059. And that's with, you know, I do have a truck now, and the truck does have a larger gas tank. The per mile fuel is probably 4 to 7 miles a gallon less than the car that I had at the same time last year. But I also am driving my work truck more, and I'm taking it home, and I'm on call more. And so I'm not actually, my personal vehicle stays at the office unless I'm going to take a trip or something. So I've been driving less than I would have been driving previously. So fuel cost has doubled, and that's thanks to Bumbles, the idiot in the White House, and the idiot Democrats, and the idiot Republicans going along with them, who are spending and spending and spending. Strangely, utilities went down a little bit, but that's because we've made some changes to our cell phones, where we're doing prepaid, which is saving us, I'd say, over half what we were spending in 2021. We were spending a considerable amount more being on a plan versus now being on prepaid. And we switched from U.S. Cellular to Verizon because U.S. Cellular has done something in our area with towers, and it's just, our signal was garbage. Mostly our internet signal was garbage. You could still make calls and texts, but, you know, my wife was having all kinds of problems with the network. Hers was constantly, she was having to constantly restart her phone. All that's gone away since we switched to Verizon. So just, you know, that's some difference. Shopping is about the same, you know, this time of year, pre-Christmas shopping and everything else. Now, some of these I can't account for, like I said. So my wife spends it on like the Old Navy credit card. I don't see that on my regular bank account. So something we're working on and talking about. And basically all the credit cards are getting put in a block of ice in the freezer. And if we need them for an emergency, they're getting thawed out. But we have to account for everything right now, because we have to know, where is our money going? I can't make a budget if I don't know where the money's going. Utilities, like I said, about the same. Here's an interesting one. ATM cash withdrawals, exactly the same to the dollar in 21 versus 22, which is weird. $160 was withdrawn in 2021 and 2022. It's so strange. Groceries is more. It's not a lot more, but I think the problem I'm seeing there, I think it is actually a lot more. The problem I have is the older statements weren't as detailed. So now the Walmart pharmacy is saying Walmart pharmacy. Before it just said Walmart. And so I had to look at the big numbers for the copays and whatnot and deduct what I thought might be that, because I'm like, well, $190. I never spend that much at Walmart. That must all be prescription. So I would take stuff like that out. So groceries is skewed. The number is wrong. I know we're spending more on groceries. I know, just because I'm the one that does the shopping. So I know when I buy a thing of eggs that used to cost $2.50 and it costs $4, I know The groceries are going up. I know that the milk, which is a dollar more now for a jug of milk, I know it costs more. So I know groceries are a lot of money, and they're a huge line item in there. One of the interesting things was, you know, we've cut way back in an attempt to control spending, and we know that eating out is one of those big things. And so one of the interesting comparisons between 2021 and 2022 is eating out is a huge, huge, like, budget suck. It just sucks all the money away. 2021, there was a trip down to Florida that my wife had, and it was a work trip, but she took the boys, and they went to Universal, and they went to, you know, they did all this stuff, and they ate out a lot. So that skewed that number really bad. And so if you were to compare it, we're definitely spending less, but that's because we've made a conscious effort to spend less. I mean, I thought it was kind of funny looking at it because I'd ate at Chick-fil-A three times as much last year as I did this year. But that's because I've consciously said, I'm not going to eat. I'm not doing this. Autos, the per month auto cost is almost the same, even though my truck is considerably more in the loan payment. Just some various things that happened last year versus this year with repairs and other things. Credit cards is up. Our payments to credit cards is up this year. And so, you know, it's just everything's up. It's clear that there's inflation happening. But the unfortunate thing is I can't with full certainty point to it and say this is the exact down to the penny number because we do everything with credit cards. So one of the things I'm doing starting in the next couple days is going to be some pretty dictatorial stuff here at the house. And it's going to involve like eating out is going to involve cash money. No one's allowed to eat out unless they spend cash. Here's the cash you get for the month. Here's the cash I get for the month. Here's the cash we have for eating out as a family. And that's it. Because it's the only way we can control it. You know, if you look at your budget and you break it down, you can export it and bring it into Excel. And in a lot of bank online apps have like, oh, where am I spending my money things. And you can see $3 for coffee, $3 for coffee, $3 for coffee, $3 for coffee. I'm not a coffee drinker, so that's not me. But if it was Chick-fil-A, it's $9 for Chick-fil-A, $9 for Chick-fil-A, $9 for Chick-fil-A. I mean, it's like, I love Chick-fil-A. And that stuff catches up to you and you have to get a handle on it. And the only way I can see that we can get a handle on it is if we is use cash. That's it. And the same, you know, I think that groceries is a harder one. We're not buying steak and lobster. We're just buying groceries. And we don't waste food. I'm very particular about that. I mean, after I cook, I put all the stuff into these leftover meal things to take lunch to work. And so I've been trying to eat on the job unless I'm traveling to an out of the area thing where I don't have a microwave. But even then, I bring the food in case I do have a microwave. So, and this time of year, in that regard, is kind of nice because it's colder. So I don't have to worry about it going bad or having to bring ice to keep it cool. But I know that utilities are going to go up. And one of the ways you can save money with utilities, and we've done this in the past, we're doing it now for heat, is turn your thermostat down and buy one of these. It's an infrared heater. They sell them at Ollie's, and they sell Eden Pure makes them, and they're the high-end ones. But you can get one at Ollie's, and they're great. And they're about, I don't know, 24 inches long. But they don't have a high energy consumption. And we had used this in the past, and probably were saving 50, 60 bucks a month compared to the year before by doing this. And so you set your thermostat much lower. And we're in the Jimmy Carter era, you know, wear sweaters. That's what we're in. And the thing that sucks is I think it's going to keep going up because they're doing something that they're really concerned about, wage inflation. Wage inflation. What is wage inflation? So this is Larry Kudlow on Fox Business talking about inflation. And this is just came out. I was listening to this the other day on XM when I was driving into work. So check it out.
In the past 2 months, household survey has lost 466,000 workers. I'll tell you, at turning points in the economy, the small household survey type businesses are frequently the leading indicators. And in this case, the trend is worsening. Now, the unemployment rate, which comes from the household survey, held steady at 3.7%. But again, that's because of the drop in the labor force. Now, back to the corporate payrolls. Over the last 3 months, they've increased an average of 272,000 compared to a 6-month average of 323,000 compared to a 12-month average of 408,000. So clearly, there's a slowdown trend. Now, for Jay Powell's Fed, there are significant wage inflation pressures that may be a big issue. Production workers' average hourly earnings jumped 0.7% and stand 5.8% above a year ago. Now, that's still below the 7.7% October CPI, so more wages earned are buying less food and groceries or gas at the pump or home heating oil. But Jay Powell has indicated several times, including this past week, that he's concerned about sticky inflation, predominantly in services, because of rising wage costs. So, caveat emptor. The Fed will do a 50 basis point hike this month, which is lower than the last many upward moves. But, by the way, they see the world. This is how they see the world. Wage inflation remains a big threat. And that strongly suggests that they are going to keep tightening interest rates well into next year. I don't happen to agree with their model, okay? I have no problem with rising wages as long as the workforce is generating the productivity to pay for them, okay? Meanwhile, congressional Democrats want to launch a lame duck spending spree. How about that? And tragically, it looks like Republicans, including the Republican Senate leadership, is going to go along with it. And unbelievably, this is just an aside, House Republicans apparently are restoring pork barrel earmarks. Whoa. Anyway, this is all exactly the wrong medicine for an ailing economy suffering from high inflation. It is exactly the wrong message. And in a smoke-filled room, out of sight of the public, in the basement of the Capitol, we could be looking at a so-called omnibus bill that would put up at least a couple of $100 billion of various social and pork barrel spending plans. And on top of this, the $5 trillion already spent by the Biden crowd in the last 2 years, which is what caused the inflation in the first place. And by the way, this little omnibus spending spree could be worse. There's a lot of talk about adding on a child tax credit. That would run about $1.5 trillion, and there'd be no work requirements. There's a lot more money coming for Ukraine. And who knows? They might even stuff John Kerry's global warming climate reparations into this monstrosity. Nobody knows. And by the way, there's still a $100 billion bill outstanding for Joe Biden's beloved Paris Climate Accord back in 2015. It's wonderful to see the Biden-Kerry America Last policy of paying hundreds of billions of dollars to bribe poorer countries never to use fossil fuel. Meanwhile, the Bidens are still doing the best they can to stop any fossil fuel production here in the U.S., which, of course, would bring down prices by boosting production and would end shortages. Every household would benefit. Look, with the country on the edge of a high inflation recession, this is a time for free market supply-side economic growth policies. How about ending the war against fossil fuels, keeping the Trump tax cuts in place, stopping the jihad, the regulatory jihad against businesses, and cutting federal spending and reimposing work requirements? What about that? Now, that's an agenda for economic growth, and that's the kind of stewardship that the Republican Party should be touting in both the Senate and the House. So I'll just say, wake up, fellas. Please wake up. And that's my riff.
You know, I talk a lot about inflation because it's important. It's a hidden tax on everybody, but it's a hidden tax that especially affects middle-class people and the poor people. And yet these poor and middle-class are so stupid that they don't vote, or they vote wrong. I'll talk about voting in a second here. So this wage inflation thing that you're hearing about, It's an insulting concept that the Federal Reserve, I don't say the federal government caused inflation. The Federal Reserve did too by their monetary policies and whatnot. But the wage inflation is to keep employees. If you have an employee like myself, I would start looking elsewhere if I knew. I like my company a lot, but I would look elsewhere if I wasn't making what I'm making right now. I've gotten two raises in the last year and a half, and I'm making $4 more an hour than I was. That's wage inflation. But inflation is the reason I got that raise. So wages aren't inflating outside in a bubble by themselves. Over here, just wages are going up crazy high. So we need to do things at the Federal Reserve to keep them down. We got this wage inflation problem taking off over here. No, we have an inflation problem, and that's causing wages to inflate to match the inflation problem. One is causing the other. We would not be getting, I would not have gotten a raise were it not for inflation. And speaking of inflation, if it's at 8%, which it's not, I'm going to use a nice round number at 10, which it's still not, but let's use this number, 10. If it's at 10% a year, that's year over year inflation. That means next year, I will be paying 10% more than I was paying this year. And the year after that, I'll be paying 10% more than I was paying that year. On and on and on. So over a 3-year period, it's 30%. And it keeps going forever if they don't get it under control. So when inflation is only at, say, 3 or 4%, which it has been in the past, when it's only at 3 or 4%, that's 3 or 4% every year. So in a 3-year period, that's, say, 12%. That's significant, but it's manageable. So right now, they've got all these problems and chaos that they created and that is affecting all of us. And the Fed wants to solve wage inflation. This is their big thing. And Kudlow's talked about this, that they're trying to create a recession to slow things down and stop this thing. And so, you raise interest rates, people like myself and you can't afford to buy a house or can't afford to buy the house they want to buy. Less houses go on the market because those people can't find houses either. And these people aren't going to trade out a 3% loan for a 7% loan. And so housing slows down. The economy slows down because there's a lot of businesses it relates to houses being sold. Speaking of houses being sold, I'd like to thank Adam Hopkins Real Estate for sponsoring this segment of the show. Adam Hopkins, AdamHopkins.net is the website, and he is a real estate broker with a bunch of real estate agents in the Forest, Virginia area, but they serve a large circle around that, so Lynchburg, Campbell, Bedford, Amherst, Nelson, Appomattox, Concord, basically anywhere in Central Virginia, the true Central Virginia. If you're interested in looking at a house or land or commercial property, get in touch with Adam and his team, AdamHopkins.net. And it's not .com. .com's another guy. It's like a film producer or something. But get in touch with Adam and his team, and they'll take good care of you. So I guess all I can do is encourage you to, get a handle on your finances. I'm not a big fan of Dave Ramsey. I think his show is boring. And his advice is great to help you get out of debt. If that's, the problem, follow that advice, get out of debt. But a lot of his other stuff is kind of stupid, Invest in 401k this and blah, blah, blah that. And, you're going to be a slave forever if, working at a job. That's what you're going to be. If that's all you want to do, okay. But if you want to live free and chart your own course, Dave Ramsey's advice is not going to get you there. One of the things I'm doing is looking at building a gypsy Airbnb trailer. Really unique thing that I can park on some land somewhere and generate cash flow. And once I've done that, my next project is the Hobbit House Airbnb, an underground house, a really unique thing that people can stay at. And then we'll see where things go from there. But that's my probably three, four-year plan. And one thing builds on another. But neither of those involves me working for the man forever. And I like my job. I like my company. But I don't want to do this forever. Well, I can't do this forever. So gold and silver is not going to get me where I want to be financially and where I want to have set myself up and my family up, and especially my wife, you know, if I die, up for success. And that's just not going to happen. And it's harder to happen. Harder. These things are harder with inflation. You know, here's the thing about inflation. It doesn't come down. Not really. You might have fuel prices come down or this thing come down or whatever. But inflation, once a thing goes up to a certain price, it can tend to stay there. Or let's look at it this way. The purchasing power of your dollar. You used to be able to go to the movie for a nickel. Can you go to the movie for a nickel now? Nope. So just think about that. Used to be able to buy a car for $300. Can you buy a car for $300? Nope. Used to be able to buy a house for $7,000 to $10,000. You can't do that anymore. So inflation is somewhat permanent. There might be some ebb and flow to what inflation does to, you know, the dollar. But that it's like a two steps forward, one step back thing. It might come down, but it never going to come down to what it was. Gas prices are another one. You know, as low as they ever go, they never go back to where they were. You know, gas prices when I was in high school was 99 cents a gallon. And then it went up to 120, and that was, oh my gosh, the world is ending. And then it went back down to 105. And everyone went, whew. And then it went up to $1.50. And everyone freaked out. Oh my gosh. And then it went back down to $1.10. See what I'm saying here? It doesn't go away. You have to do things financially that beat that. And what beats that is generating cash flow. That's it. If you're interested in this topic, read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Get started there. It's a great book. Read The 4-Hour Work Week by Tim Ferriss. Rich Dad, Poor Dad's Robert Kiyosaki. They both are in audiobooks, and both are very good as audiobooks, and you can go check those out. But it might get you starting to think a little bit differently about money. The Federal Reserve is evil. The government is evil. The IRS is evil.
You got the vaccination? Are you okay? I mean, you seem, no, it works. Or the mom and dad, or the neighbor, or when you go to church, or when you're, no, I really mean it. There are trusted interlocutors. Think of the people. If your kid wanted to find out whether or not there's a man on the moon, or whatever, you know, something, or, you know, whether those aliens are here or not.
Oh, I don't know what the hell that was. And then you just expect that we all just forget about it.
So let's talk about December 7th, 1941. This is from defense.gov. The 1941 attacks on Pearl Harbor, Hawaii killed more than 2,400 U.S. personnel and thrust the U.S. into World War II. Many of the service members who died on that day were heroes. One of those men was Navy Ensign Herbert C. Jones. Jones was born January 21st, 1918, and grew up in Los Angeles, California. His father, Herbert A. Jones, was a Navy captain, which may have inspired the young man to join the Naval Reserves in 1935 when he was only 17. Jones completed 2 years of college before receiving his midshipman's training. He was then commissioned as an ensign on November 14th, 1940, and sent to join the battleship USS California at Pearl Harbor. His fiancée, Joanne, eventually joined him, and they married the following summer. Jones was stationed on the California on December 7th, 1941, when the island was attacked. Pearl Harbor's battleship, Roe, where the ship was moored alongside many others, became the prime target of the Japanese. Like many other ships that day, California's commanding and executive officers, weren't aboard since the night before was a liberty night for many. Jones had just relieved the junior officer of the deck and had begun his duties when the raid started. Quickly, the ship was hit by two torpedoes. In the first few minutes of the attack, Jones rescued a sailor from a smoke-filled compartment and led an anti-aircraft battery in firing on Japanese planes, according to the National World War II Museum. When Jones realized a torpedo had damaged the mechanical hoists that load ammunition to the ship's anti-aircraft gun battery, he led a group of men on a mission to manually supply the ammo. Jones and other men were on the third deck passing ammunition up ladders to the battery and weighed about 50 pounds. When a bomb exploded on the second deck, the young officer was severely injured by the explosion, which plunged the third deck compartment where the men were into smoke-filled darkness. The ship began to flood from the damage when a large drifting mass of burning oil from the other ravaged ships threatened to set the California on fire. The order went out to abandon ship. Two men tried to drag Jones out of the fire-filled compartment, but he refused, fearing more for their lives than his own. The 23-year-old reportedly said to them, "Leave me alone. I'm done for. Get out of here before the magazines go off." Jones' actions inspired the men around him, including Marine Corps Private Howard Haynes, who was awaiting a misconduct discharge and had been confined on the ship before the attack. A remorseful Haynes later told his superiors that he was alive because of what Jones did. "God gave me a chance to prove I'm worth it," he said. A few days after the attack, the California settled on the bottom of Pearl Harbor. However, parts of the upper deck were still above water. The ship was raised a few months later and underwent repairs that weren't completed until January 1944. On March 1942, Jones posthumously received the Medal of Honor for his bravery and sacrifice. Navy records show he was one of 15 sailors to have earned the nation's highest honor at Pearl Harbor. Only five of them survived that day. Jones was one of nearly 100 men from the USS California who died at Pearl Harbor. He is buried alongside his parents in Fort Rosecrans National Cemetery in San Diego. In 1943, the destroyer escort USS Herbert C. Jones was launched in his honor. His widow Joanne christened the ship, which spent much of the rest of the war serving off the coast of North Africa and Italy. There was barely a mention of Pearl Harbor, December 7th. I saw a few things on Instagram. I heard nothing on the news. I heard nothing even on talk radio. History that is forgotten is doomed to repeat itself. And unfortunately, it seems to be the pattern of humans pretty much everywhere. Our military is amazing. It's an amazing organization full of amazing people. Never had the opportunity to serve. And I was thinking about this the other day. If it wasn't for the fact that I had diabetes, I guarantee on 9/11 that I would have ran down to the recruiting office. But I guess God had other plans. So thank you to all those that serve. I know it's not Veterans Day or anything, but I appreciate you. And all the patriots out there, thank you for what you do, standing, fighting for liberty. Now I'm going to read a chapter from The Doctrine of the Lesser Magistrates, and this is a great book. I'd highly recommend you get it. You can find information about this in the show notes where I first did an episode on this, so the one that says chapter one. You can find a link to where to get this. This is a really interesting book, and it talks a lot about the structure of government as it should be, and especially as it is in America. But as it is from a Christian perspective, and any perspective really, is that we are sovereign, for one, and that two, that there is an order to things, and there are laws, and there are rules, and there are magistrates, these people who at all levels have authority to say no when stuff is being done wrong. And quite often they don't, but this book talks a lot about that. So I'd highly recommend you go listen to those previous chapters. The Duty of the Lesser Magistrates, Chapter 4. Duty is a word not often mentioned in our nation today. Expediency prevails. The path of least resistance is the path that most follow in our day. Whether in private or public life, commitment is a virtue long lost on Americans. Just consider the divorce rate if you doubt this. Duty is that which a person owes to another, or by which a person is bound to another. by any natural, moral, or lawful obligation to perform. Duty is any action required by one's position or by moral or lawful considerations. A magistrate is a person clothed with power as a public service official, whether executive, legislative, or judicial. As the title implies, a lesser magistrate is one who possesses less power than a higher magistrate. For example, a county executive possesses less authority than a state governor. The possession of the lesser magistrate can be obtained by election or by appointment. The primary duty of the lesser magistrate regarding the doctrine of the lesser magistrates is threefold. First, they are to oppose and resist any laws or edicts from the higher authority that contravene the law or word of God. Second, they are to protect the person, liberty, and property of those who reside within their jurisdiction from any unjust or immoral laws or actions by the higher authority. Third, they are not to implement any laws or decrees made by the higher authority that violate the Constitution and, if necessary, resist them. They cannot hide behind the excuse, "I'm just doing my job," or "I'm just following the law of the land," as an attempt to escape their duty. The duty of the lesser magistrate is to uphold that which is right in the sight of God, and to protect the people where his local authority or function resides. This is a sacred duty. We define it as sacred because it is founded in Scripture and proceeds from God. When we speak of lesser magistrates, we are usually talking about a more local authority. Whatever the local authority may be, its jurisdiction is smaller than the higher authority that legislate an unjust or immoral decree. Whether a governor or state legislature, standing in defiance of the president or Congress or the Supreme Court, or whether a mayor or city council standing in defiance of the governor or Congress or state legislature, the authority of the lesser magistrate is more local than the higher magistrate. Lesser magistrates are not to just unquestioningly do the bidding of the higher authority. State governments, for example, were never intended to be mere conduits or implementation centers for federal government regulation, law, and policy as they have become today. Herbert Schlossberg speaks to this point in his magnum opus, Idols for Destruction. He says regarding the lesser magistrates, "The framers of the American Constitution were conscious of the excess to which centralized political systems were prone, and their solution was to devise multiple levels of authority. The existence of states, cities, counties, townships, and independent taxing authorities, which to apologists for the state has been a messy derogation from beneficent centralized power, has saved us from some sorts of assaults on freedom that others have suffered." Schlossberg points out, however, that in our day, these intermediate institutions, which formerly served to check the central power, have largely atrophied. He later concludes, "After 75 years, the new nationalism has borne bitter fruit. People who have despised the right of localities to govern themselves had delivered them into the hands of federal masters. Local politicians have acquiesced to the mugging of the provinces because in return for giving up political authority, they have received monetary benefits. In other words, with the shekels come the shackles. The federal master has bought the lesser magistrates off so they more readily do its bidding, rather than the people's. The lesser authorities become mere implementation centers of federal policy." The lesser magistrates in America today need to be reminded that the magistrate who upholds or follows an unjust or immoral law becomes complicit in the higher authority's rebellion against God. Salisbury rightly declared in Polycraticus, "Loyal shoulders should sustain the power of the ruler so long as it is exercised in subjection to God and follows his ordinances. But if it resists and opposes the divine commandments and wishes to make me share in its war against God, then with unrestrained voice I answer back that God must be preferred before any man on earth." The resistance offered by lesser magistrates is wise and proper. Peasant revolts are easily put down by governments and suppressed. They lack the cohesion and order necessary to offer successful resistance to tyranny by any organized central power. The following list demonstrates why resistance by lesser magistrates is wise and necessary to turn back acts of tyrants by any higher authority. Lesser magistrates already possess lawful, God-given authority, which they may invoke. Lesser magistrates have been supported by many in their successful bid to achieve office. Therefore, they have an established power base of popular support already in place. Lesser magistrates usually have constitutional precedent and law on their side, So in other words, there is some heritage or history to which they can appeal. Lesser magistrates already have access to public forums by which they can articulate the particulars of the grievances involved. Lesser magistrates, by virtue of their office, are able to address the pangs of conscience, doubt, and indecision of the people when they see tyranny developing in their nation and see the need for resistance. People respond to honorable and authoritative leadership so that they recognize the lesser magistrates' God-given authority to resist unjust and immoral law and can rally behind them. Lesser magistrates can provide relief and refuge, protection and support for the distressed more readily than can ordinary individuals, becoming by their office an instrument of temporal deliverance, salvation for the distressed. This is an institutionalized deliverance, a theme reiterated in Scripture repeatedly. Lesser magistrates can strike terror into the hearts of the oppressors, flushing them out into the open and exposing them for promoting what is evil, even as they attack the lesser magistrate's position of office and further their injustice. Lesser magistrates have the best chance of resolving injustice without upheaval or bloodshed. A tyrannical government is less anxious to push their oppression if they know that the opposition has the proper leadership and order of lesser magistrates. When the lesser magistrates refuse to comply with unjust or immoral law, the matter can often be resolved in favor of what is right without armed revolution or bloodshed being necessary. God declares a willingness to support such magistrates in their capacity in office, as they represent what God instituted government to be, a picture of true justice to the culture, citizenry at large, and an empowered and proper deliverance against the onslaughts of oppression and evil. Such a position gives people hope and a foundation upon which to erect a just and upright system of constitutional protections and proper due process of law as bulwarks against tyranny. Lesser magistrates, by virtue of their office, constitute lawful authority. When the lesser magistrate stands against the unjust or immoral law made by a superior, his actions benefit those under his jurisdiction as well as the nation as a whole. Simply put, the lesser magistrates provide order when the superior authority acts unjustly or immorally, and its abuse of power needs to be quelled. I really like the whole concept of this. I think this is the way things should go. When you see what's going on with the election fraud, when you see what's going on with, look back recently at the COVID lockdowns and some of this other stuff. These totalitarian, authoritarian people, the higher magistrates, their superior authorities to the lower magistrates, were enacting all of these things. Decrees, not laws, decrees, unlawful, shutting down businesses. Local, regional, lesser magistrates should have stood up and said, no, I'm not enforcing this. And you saw this a little bit. Some of the sheriffs said, I'm not doing it. And that was good. Good for them. We did see that. But overall, you know, the Virginia Department of Health lower magistrates, they didn't say no. They were willing accomplices in this tyranny. So this is a very rare thing to actually have people do this. And I think it's because we don't know about this concept. We just don't understand it. I'm just doing my job. Yeah, but your job's outside of the law. Just doing my job. I was having a conversation with my mom, you know, how much I hate the tax people saying certain things. And she said, well, they are just doing their job. And I said, not a valid excuse. You know, if your job is to be an agent of tyranny, you should find another job. Because one day, it's going to catch up with you in a violent way. Because most people are going to eventually get sick of it. It's that long train of abuses line from the Declaration of Independence. How we're willing to put up with things for a long time. Because it's sometimes easier to suffer the injustices than it is to fight back. But eventually, people say, I've had enough of this. I'm not doing it anymore. So, good stuff. The subtitle is A Proper Resistance to Tyranny and a Repudiation of the Unlimited Obedience to Civil Government, which you see a lot. You see churches today have this weird, almost government worship in their minds and in the things that they say and the things that they do. And it's not biblical. It's wrong. So, all right, now I'm going to share with you a little snippet from Soviet Life, Communist Propaganda from 1984. that was circulating throughout the United States. Fortunately, I found a copy at an antique store, and I've been sharing different parts of that. If you want to hear those, go back and listen to those shows. There's some really interesting stuff. And today's little snippet here is called Man and Nature. I wonder what kind of propaganda from 1984 that we'll hear out of this that's being said today. I don't know. Let's check it out. Lake Baikal is famous for its extraordinary beauty. At the same time, it is the world's largest reservoir of fresh water, containing 20% of the global reserves. The value of this Soviet asset increases as the problem of fresh water grows more complex, and as the area around the lake, situated as it is in one of the industrial centers of eastern Siberia, becomes increasingly affected by human economic activity. At one time, there was reason for worrying about the fate of Lake Baikal. And the problem of keeping its water clean was the focus of large-scale debates in the press. Eventually, the joint efforts of various ministries and departments, research centers, and the public yielded results. A series of practical measures was worked out to prevent industrialization from doing damage to the lake. New waste purification methods, the expansion of non-polluting production, and a strict ban on lumbering at Lake Baikal give grounds for optimism. By and large, the ecological situation in the USSR, according to the United Nations experts, is better than it is in the majority of the industrialized Western countries. Okay, we know that that's not true. Looking back at history, we know that's not true. But I'll continue. This does not mean, however, that the Soviet Union is complacent toward the pollution problem. A good deal has been done, of course. In 1980 alone, centrally managed capital investment in the regional use of natural resources and in environmental protection amounted to 1.8 billion rubles. Economic planning makes it possible to close down existing production units and to refrain from building new ones if they are harmful to the environment, even if they are profitable, and to invest heavily in purification installations. There nevertheless remain quite a few ecological problems related not only to Lake Baikal, but to the Volga River, the Caspian Sea, the forests, the air of our cities, and to numerous animal species that need to be protected. That's why the Communist Party has mapped out an extensive program of environmental protection for the new five-year period of 1981 to 1985. Further, land restoration work is planned. Water conservation facilities in the basins of the Black, Azov, Caspian, and Baltic Seas will be built at faster rates. Work will be continued to protect Lake Baikal as well. Environmental protection benefits the entire human race, and the efforts of many countries should be pooled to effectively resolve today's ecological problems. The Soviet Union wholeheartedly advocates this cooperation and conducts various environmental protection activities jointly with other countries. The Soviet Union cooperates in this area with the United States as well. A report appeared in the last issue of Soviet Life about two U.S. scientists who joined their Soviet colleagues in a study of animal life of Lake Baikal. This example is not an exception. In both countries, and the world as a whole, if Soviet-American cooperation in ecology went even further. It's a beautiful picture they've got here of the lake. Pretty cool. It actually looks almost tropical. So, what did you hear that was the same? I heard a few things. This wasn't near as extreme as I was expecting, but it's got a lot of those undertones that you hear now as far as environmental protection. And look, I'm not saying we shouldn't protect the environment. That's not what I'm saying. I think we should. I think we're called to be stewards of doing that. But at the same time, that's not at the expense of humans. And there's a way to do both. There's a way to protect the environment. There's a way to log responsibly, right? Look at California and the problems they're having. The problems they're having are related to the fact that they don't log those trees. And so then they have fires upon fires upon fires. And when they have a fire, then underbrush grows back that's really flammable. And then they have a fire again or a fire somewhere else. The same thing. It's just this repetitive cycle where, you know how those firefighters used to fight those fires? They had logging roads to drive up there into the forest and fight those fires. But all those logging roads are gone because they've all been overgrown by trees because they refuse to log. And you have these beetles come in and they kill a tree and then they move on to the next tree and the next tree and the next tree. So you have all these dead trees. These dead trees are good fuel. Lightning strike happens, catches on fire, whoosh, the whole forest goes. If you've ever spent any time in the woods doing bushcraft stuff, you know that pine is very flammable. And the pitch and the sap, and you can do a lot of really cool things with things like fatwood, which is really sap-rich wood, and other things. I mean, you can light that. So you can light sap. You can just pick it off of the tree and light it and use that to start your fire. So those type of trees are very flammable, and in and of themselves, they can be soaking wet and still you can light them on fire. So, you know, it's a problem, and California refuses to deal with this. They know what the problem is, but they stuck their head in the sand or whatever. I don't know. But that's the same stuff here. Now I'm going to do some little quick check in here. So according to the internets, panda.org, probably a leftist site, you know, one of those green sites. What is so special about Lake Baikal? So large that it is often mistaken for a sea. Russia's Lake Baikal is the deepest and oldest lake in the world and the largest freshwater lake by volume. Famous for its crystal clear waters and unique wildlife, the lake is under threat by pollution, poaching, and development. Huh. So this is obviously written recently, and it sounds the same as they were saying back then. Now, if you're the largest lake, what constitutes threat by pollution? This is from a website called Hydrotech. Russia's Lake Baikal became extremely polluted by harmful toxic materials and anti-WWTP regulations. The largest freshwater lake in the world is facing extreme pollution. According to an assessment obtained by Russian TASS news agency, more than 15,000 tons of toxic waste have flown into Lake Baikal from the Selenga River since 2010. So this is post-communism. We got to give them credit for that. I mean, you can't say, but you know, honestly, we wouldn't know what kind of pollution effects were happening in the Soviet era because they would never have told the world. China lies all the time. The Soviets lied all the time. I mean, Russians lie, but you know, in any case, the situation is however, far more, supposed to be however, far more dramatic as Ulan Ude, an industrial city, discharges 56 million liters of sewage water into the Selenga River, which is the largest flow into Baikal. Oh, well, that's just stupid. Why would you, is it unprocessed sewage water? It's probably unprocessed sewage water, I mean, because they do that all the time, actually, process the sewage and then release it into rivers. Lake Baikal is, you know, if you didn't know that, I know it's gross, but that's what they do. Lake, I mean, go down the James River. You'll see that at a few different places. You don't want to swim in that river in most spots, actually. People fish there, and I'm like, catch and release? Oh, no? Oh, okay. Lake Baikal is the largest freshwater lake. Given the water volume of 24,000 kilometers cubed, it accounts for one-fifth of the world's water reserve. Its uniqueness lies in more than 3,600 endemic species of plants and animals found nowhere else in the world. These are the main causes why Lake Baikal needs to be protected and its pollution eliminated. The current situation, however, is just the opposite. Both the daily flow of toxic waste and the unnecessary regulations harm the lake. The scientists at the Russian Academy of Science criticized the environment officials for the passage of regulations preventing the launch of wastewater treatment plants, the construction of which began in 2017. In paradox, the protection measures for Lake Baikal and Russia are stipulated by a special law. Russian government put 26 billion rubles, that's 385 million euros, to fund the renovation and completion of the wastewater treatment plant in the region of Listvyanka and Ulan Ude. In 2017, ecologist Sergei Shapkayev anxiously said for The Guardian that the strictest of laws is negatively compensated by the optional compliance. In other words, the allocated funds just disappear. In a corrupt country? That's shocking. Other threats. The amount of chemicals from industrial areas and the corruption preventing the removal of those chemicals are not only causes of the poor Baikal situation. While the government funds the completion of the WWTPs, Russian Ministry of Natural Resources and Environment published a draft that increases maximum permissible levels of entered toxic substances in Lake Baikal. In practice, the amounts of nitrates and anionic synthetic surfactants would increase 14 to 10 times. The level of chemicals derived from oil should double. Alexander Kolotov, head of the environmental organization Rivers Without Borders. That's clever. It's like Doctors Without Borders, Rivers Without Borders. Says that the current standards for the construction of wastewater treatment plants are related to the requirements on the quality of water discharged into Baikal. Kolotov also told Radio Free Europe that there are two different approaches to solving the problem, either to improve the purification technology or lower the standard for the discharge of chemicals. According to Kolotov, the officials decided to take the easier path, treating the site like an ordinary fishery reservoir. Then it goes on to talk about tourism and fishing and other things like that. But ultimately, you know, who knows what's true here, because this is the same thing we see in the United States. They say, you know, this is polluting this and there's yada yada that and these rules don't work and so we need to go full draconian, and none of what they say is true though. So it's hard to say if this is true, if it's being polluted. And if they're dumping sewage into the river that feeds into there, it would pollute the lake. But I kind of digressed from where we were going here with the article from Soviet Life. But let's try and find out if there's any history of the Soviet era. So this is from a blog, and it talks about the communist era. So it says, during Stalin's reign in the USSR, it's safe to say that certain aspects of society were neglected. One important concept that did not receive the attention that it deserved was the idea of environmental conservation. Due to Stalin's great emphasis on industrialization of the Soviet Union, environmental issues were not properly acknowledged. Lake Baikal is a prime example of a devastating impact of environmental neglect. Located in southeastern Siberia, Lake Baikal is the world's largest freshwater body of water. This body of water is so massive that it accounts for 20% of the world's freshwater. The lake is home to 1,200 different species of animals and 1,000 species of plants, according to this subject essay. Lake Baikal holds historical significance as well, regarding as being sacred to early Russians who colonized the area in the 1600s. Now, I'm going to go to this subject essay. Let's see what it's saying. Industrialization, an important goal of Stalin, took devastating tolls on the lake. Because of the lake's abundance of natural resources, oil and mineral exploration, and lumbering projects were numerous. During the war, and due to relative dangerous conditions in cities, factories were built on the lake to provide safety for these installments. The Baikal Amur mainline and Baikal pulp and paper plant were among the most destructive of industrial installations. The construction of the railway and the waste from the paper plant progressively polluted the lake and turned the historically clear waters into a murky mess. Before the extent of environmental neglect of the lake obvious and undeniable, the impacts of industrialization were debated, and many speculated on the effects factories would have on the lake. One such article outlines thoughts and predictions of such effects. Due to the Soviet Union's notorious reputation for political repression, Russian environmentalist concerns for Lake Baikal were completely ignored. A lot of the opposition for the environmental neglect of the lake was voiced in the official press. The neglect of the lake united and mobilized citizens in their concerns for the environment. So there you have it. That was around 1980 that they were having these problems of pollution. This Soviet Life article came out and was probably written around the same time, and then came out in 1984 earlier, but this 1981, it came out in this 1981 edition of this magazine. So, well, it's 100% guaranteed that this is communist propaganda, because they're talking about it like, we must preserve what is this pristine, perfect, not polluted lake that hasn't been touched by our environmentalism. As we grow and we move into the area, we need to make sure that we're protecting it from logging and tourism and fishing and da-da-da-da-da. And they didn't. And now we're still hearing about these problems. I would imagine it's a little better now, in that we're able to clean it. We have technology that's just better. Even if you don't implement it at all, it's still going to be better than what they were doing, which was probably nothing. They were probably straight just dumping chemicals from the paper production process right into the lake. They were probably just dumping raw sewage everywhere right into the lake. Whatever, comrade, for the Soviet mother Russia. So what do we learn from this? Nothing's changed. Propaganda hasn't changed. Environmentalism hasn't changed. It's all the same. It's all the same stuff. And in fact, humans haven't changed. This is what people are amazing to me when they act like, you know, we change. We're the same. Well, thanks to John and his team for supporting this show for a while now. Act to Care of the Blue Ridge, ACTIKARE.com/blue-ridge is their website. And if you're looking for in-home senior care for your senior loved one in the Amherst, Campbell, Bedford, Lynchburg, surrounding county areas, get in touch with them, ACTIKARE.com/blue-ridge. That's going to wrap it up here. Appreciate your attentiveness. If you want the show notes, you can find those at RadioFreeVirginia.com. Remember, you were not made to fit in. You were born to stand out. I'm Hank Rudin. This is Radio Free Virginia. God bless you.